Blog Talk Radio.
Everybody, and welcome to another episode of Beyond the Cover here with your hosts, John Robb and Jeff Ayers. I am John Robb.
And I'm Jeff Ayers. Hi.
And we want to welcome you today to the show with very, very special guest, Tess Garrison, who's going to be talking about her latest book, Die Again, along with many other subjects that we have going on. So let's just cut right to the chase right now, Jeff, and here we go. So, Tess, thanks so much for coming on. How are you doing?
I'm great. Your music makes me scared.
Well, good. That's kind of the idea, but it was, you know, it was. I think it's called Carnival, Les Carnival. And Jeff thought it was from Fantasia, and I was like, I don't know. It's like, it sounded like Harry Potter to me, but I wasn't quite sure.
Well, it's creepy.
That's good. And it was. It's even better if it played on time when it was supposed to instead of delaying. But that's okay. So, again, Tess, thank you so much for coming on today. We really appreciate you spending some time with us to talk about not only Die Again, which is your latest Rizzoli and Isles book, but, you know, a lot of other things that are happening. So, first of all, let's just get right into the book, Die Again. It came out the end of December, rated extremely very highly. We know Jeff wrote a fabulous review. Give us a little background here on your latest book.
Well, let me tell you where the idea came from. I mean, I like to take a lot of ideas from my own life. And usually I'm looking for things that scare me. So a couple of years ago, my husband and I went on safari in South Africa. And while we were there, we had this incident in the bush. We were out at a clearing with our bush guide, and it was a beautiful sunset, and we were having drinks. And my husband said, well, I need to go pee. I'm going to go in that bush over there. And our guide said, oh, go in the other direction, because I'd heard rumors of a leopard in that first direction. So my husband went off to go to the bushes, and out of the bush he had originally been headed for, a leopard walked out. And we were all standing around outside the Jeep with our cocktails, and our guide just moved between us and the leopard, told everybody to freeze, and he just made himself really big, and he scared that leopard away. And I thought, wow, this guy saved our life. He definitely saved my husband's life, who would have, you know, ended up dead with his fly open. It would have been really an embarrassing death. So I thought later on, you're out in the bush, everything is out there wanting to eat you, and you have to trust somebody. But what if you trusted the wrong person? And that got the whole idea for Die Again. What if the most dangerous creature in the bush is on two legs?
And it is such a terrific, one of the things I liked about it, in addition to the story in the past and the murders in the present, is how you sort of flipped Jane and Mara. Mara became the one who was going with her gut, and Jane was the one who was demanding the facts. And I thought that was a neat little twist.
Well, you know, like every friendship, and these women have been friends in 11 books, well, 10 books now, if you leave off the surgeon. And like every friendship, you know, they have their ups and downs, their arguments, there are things that people don't, the misunderstandings. And I think you are seeing in this book that Jane is questioning Maura's judgment. She wonders if Maura's a little bit off balance because of some personal issues. And Maura is just following her instincts for the first time. So it's an interesting way of looking at relationships between these, you know, between people.
Do you think their friendship is the reason why these novels are so good?
Well, I think it's the reason why so many people keep following them. Yeah, I was surprised because when I started writing the books, I never intended to have a series. I mean, The Surgeon was supposed to be a one-off. But then I was interested in Jane Rizzoli, so I wrote the second book. And then Maura was introduced in the second book, and I want to know more about her. And over the course of these stories, as I've seen their relationship grow, I want to write the next book because I want to see what happens to them in their lives. I think that's what readers are looking for, too.
So, if I get this right, I don't think that you're a big outliner. You're more of an organic writer because you're not really sure, I don't think, from book to book maybe what's going to happen. So they kind of surprise you when you're writing the book, like just like in Die Again, all of a sudden, like Jeff said, things were kind of flipped a little on their heels between Jane and Maura. So you don't really, do you go into a new book with a preconceived notion of maybe what you want to do, or you just kind of let it just grow as you start writing?
I very much let it grow. You're right. I'm an organic writer. I will know the initial inciting incident, or I will have this theme in mind, like, you know, Egyptology. I use that for the keepsake. But I really have no idea who the bad guy is most of the time, which means I, about halfway through the book, I always get writer's block because then I have to figure out who's doing it and why.
Well, one of the other things I love about your books is how you take these medical terms, which I know nothing about, and you borderline the icky stuff sometimes, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
how do you make that understandable and palatable to a reader like myself?
Well, that, you know, that's a real challenge because I am translating science. I'm translating medicine. And I, one of the ways I do it is I have a layperson who's Jane. Jane doesn't know medicine. So she gets stuff explained to her all the time. The last thing I want to do is pull a Tom Clancy and you know, get out of the story and explain things for a couple of paragraphs, which is a real plot killer. So a lot of it is taken, you understand things in context, maybe. I mean, the example I always give is the old TV show ER, where the doctors would be running around yelling things, and you would have no idea what they're actually saying, but you know from the tone of their voice and the context in which they say it that VTAC is a bad thing. You don't need to know what VTAC is.
Yep.
Yeah, I have no idea what VTAC is.
It's a bad thing.
I'm sitting here thinking VTAC. You got me on there. It's like a bad stapler. I have no idea.
It's ventricular tachycardia. It's like it's not a good rhythm for your heart to have.
I think I'm having that now. No, I'm kidding.
Yeah. The music did it. So here's something that with social media becoming so big now, and everybody's on it, everybody likes to talk, and people like to throw out their opinion. And of course, with Rizzoli and Isles now, I think it's their sixth season or is it their fifth season?
They're going into their sixth season.
That's okay, yeah, their sixth season. So now when, you know, there's a name associated with them and a face and a voice, and
mm-hmm.
people are now on social media and they're throwing things out there and this and that, do you ever let any of the show or what people are saying about, oh, well, she wouldn't do this or whatever, do you ever let that influence you when you're sitting down to write another book, or you just take that totally away and say, look, the shows are one thing, the books are another?
I completely separate my books from the show. I watch it because I want to be able to see what the writers are doing, and because my readers are also watching the show and they'll ask me about details. But when it comes to my stories, I want to stick to my own universe. And it's hard sometimes because there are just enough similarities that readers get confused when they go back and forth. They don't remember that Jane is married in the books, and they go to the show and say, oh, where's her husband? Or where's her
mm-hmm.
child? So it's really important for me to stay true to what I have envisioned from the very beginning.
Well, I was going to say, Casey's on the transporter now. could you talk a bit about how the show came into being? I've always been curious about that.
Yeah, it's one of these things where it was a stroke of luck that this producer had been reading the books. His name is Bill Haber, and he called me, oh, it might have been around halfway through the series, about maybe book 4 or 5, and he said, I've been reading your books, and I love your girls, and I think they belong on TV. Now, I've sold the movie rights to most of my thrillers, and nothing ever happens. I have really pessimistic view of Hollywood. So all I cared about was that his check was good. I cashed his check and I walked away and forgot about it, because that's the way to keep your sanity in Hollywood. Just, you know, take the money and walk away. But a year later, he called again and he said, we have a really, really good script, and now we're going to be looking for our Jane Rizzoli. And I thought, well, this will fall apart, as it always does. And to my surprise, a couple of months later, he said, we found Jane Rizzoli, and she's Angie Harmon. Now, if you read the books, you know that Jane in the books is not gorgeous. She is not in any way an attractive woman. The men are always ignoring her. And suddenly she's played by the most one of the most beautiful women on television. So I had to accept the fact that Jane Rosoli is now beautiful, and it just went from there.
Yeah,
that's
I got to
really
admit. I mean, I watched Law and Order when Angie Harmon was on, and I mean she is now, and now, you know, she's single again. So,
that's right. She's available, guys.
That's right. She doesn't. Jason Seahorn just couldn't catch up, but yeah, it's like there she goes. Now, when you're looking now, you've written also. You know, your last one, Last to Die, was a couple of years ago, which actually was our first for the magazine Crimson Scribe Award winner for the best book of the year. And then you kind of took some time off before you kind of had Die again. Was that maybe just writer's burnout? Was that something that you just got? You're like, I need a break away.
Well, you know, I have over 30 years. I've written, I published 25 books, which is you know pretty regular.
That's good. Yeah.
And honestly, as I get older, I'm thinking, okay, how many years of mobility do I have to go hiking in Africa? And do I really want to spend those chained to my desk turning in a book a year? And it got to the point where it was life balance. I mean, I want to write until I drop dead. But I also want to live, and I have so many other interests and so many other things I love doing, like traveling. And that was the year I was going to take a breather. And strangely enough, an accidental book kind of popped up, which I've just finished. So that'll be coming out later on this year. It's funny, you know, when you take a year off, I feel like it recharges your creative impulses, and you may find that you actually write faster.
Yeah, I guess you can take the author behind the computer, but you can never take the story out of the author.
Well, you know, I always tell people that writing is a 24-hour-a-day job. You may be in bed, you may be sleeping, but your brain is still working. And in fact, the book that's I just finished writing came to me in a nightmare. So it's good to have I welcome my nightmares. They end up being books.
Oh my goodness. Well, I have to ask, there's sort of a stereotype out there that people who watch TV are not readers, and readers are primarily not TV watchers. I'm just kind of curious what your thoughts are on that.
I don't know if that's true. I mean, I don't watch a lot of television. I have very specific programs that I must watch every week. I mean, I always watch Downton Abbey when it's on. I always watch Walking Dead, and of course I watch Rosoli and Isles, and of course Game of Thrones. But other than though, I mean, I try to stick to really really good television. And oh, I have to say, I am addicted to Big Bang Theory, and I probably watch those reruns again and again. But I also read, so I don't think I'm that unusual. Now, it's true that readers have a lot of other choices, but I think what's taking people away from reading is not television. I think it's computers. I think it's the Internet.
Really?
Yeah, I think we waste more time in front of our computers surfing the Internet than we do on television.
Yeah, no, I do agree. I mean, the one thing that I've noticed myself about television was this, was when they took, I was watching Gotham and Sleepy Hollow and, I don't know, a couple other shows before that break in the wintertime. You know, they always take that break. And all of a sudden, the shows have come back, and I didn't miss them. I was I didn't miss them.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, the way television is structured now, especially the really, really good TV shows, they have limited seasons. You know, they'll go for a couple of months, and then they'll take a hiatus, and then you get to watch the next great show that you love. So it's a different way of storytelling that television has discovered. It used to be, you know, Gilligan's Island was on every single week, and now you have Game of Thrones, which goes on only for a couple of months, and then it disappears for a while. But it doesn't hurt the storytelling. Maybe it makes the storytelling better.
You know, and speaking of storytelling, I want to get in here real quick. Sorry, John. I want to get in real quick because the one thing that I've been exploring a lot lately is villains. And the reason I've been exploring that is because I'm like, to me, I tried to sit down and figure out in my head, I'm like, what keeps me driving to read and go? And for me, it was the villains. I love to see how great authors like yourself Again, everybody, we're speaking with Tess Gerritsen here. Go to TessGerritsen.com for a lot more information. But there is – the villain is the thing that drives me. So my question is, when you're sitting down and write, how much thought do you put into the villain in making sure that he's a real person that will scare the hell out of him?
It depends on the book. I mean, I think for Die Again, the villain was in a lot of ways hidden. You saw what he did. You sort of understood where his culture came from. He is at heart a hunter, but you didn't really see the inside of the villain. You didn't hear his thoughts. Unlike my first book, The Surgeon, where you knew that villain, like you understood the way he thought and why he hunted and the way and he was truly creepy. So there's a whole range of ways to approach a villain. And in many ways, I think the villain who remains in the shadows is the most frightening one of all. It's like monster movies. As soon as a monster comes out, they're not as scary. But before they show up on the screen, your imagination conjures up far, far worse than special effects can ever give you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree with that.
And I'm never going to go on a safari again after your next last book. So
oh,
thanks
yeah.
for that.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I'm sorry to hear that, because the last thing I want to do is scare people away from safaris.
Are you compelled to not write a standalone at this point? And the reason I ask is John and I last week talked about series characters and how we like just writers. They don't necessarily have to write the same character. So I'm just kind of curious if you are compelled to not write a standalone.
There's a business pressure. Certainly, I mean, my contracts specify two more Rizzoli and Isles books. They're very specific about that. And so when I popped up with this extra book that I'm just finishing now, which is not a Rizzoli and Isles book, it's a complete standalone about the Italian Holocaust. I think my publisher said, well, we don't know what to do with this. But they have it under contract anyway. It's so important when a book comes up in an author's mind that is important to them, that really moves them and excites them, they should be able to write that. Now, whether they can sell that is a different matter, but I think life is short. Write the book you want to write.
Yeah, well, I'll tell you what, if you have a problem with your publisher, come to me, because our publishing company will publish it. Don't even worry about
it. I can't
that.
Wait to read it.
Well, this book is really, no, this is a book that was born out of a nightmare. I was in Venice for my birthday, and I had this dream that I was playing my violin, and as I was playing it, this little baby sitting next to me, her eyes glowed red, and she turned into a monster. And I woke up thinking, oh my God, what does this mean? As I walked around the streets of Venice, the story came to me about a piece of music that is haunted, or could be haunted. I mean, this woman violinist picks it up in an antique store. She plays it, and every time she plays it, her three-year-old daughter does something horrifying. So she wonders, is there some power to this music that I don't know about, and has to dig into the history of it. And it leads back to the Italian Holocaust, which is an interesting part of history, in that Italy was really different from Poland and Holland and Germany during World War II. Italy saved 85% of its Jews, and the question is why? What does it say about the Italian character? So I want to write a story about that and about the power of music to influence people even 70 years after the composer's dead.
Well,
I want to read it right now. That's all.
Well, here's the fun part. Okay, here's the part that really made it fun. It's about this haunted piece of music, which is it's titled Incendio, because that's the title of the song. And I've composed it, and we're going to hire a violinist to perform. I'm not good enough. A violinist to record it for me, so that when you buy the book, you can go online and hear this waltz. And then, so the waltz is the music is the book is about the waltz, and the waltz is really inspired by the story.
That is so cool.
Oh, definitely.
Yeah. Now, Tess, we talked a little off the air here, so we're going to go back to Hollywood.
Okay.
And because you had mentioned, of course, and I totally agree, you can't trust them because there's so many things that go on. And you publicly had a book called Gravity, which was made into a movie with, and of course, I'm going to let you explain. I was going to try to do a little bit. It was made into a movie off your book, but you didn't get any credit for it. You were kind of totally left out of the whole situation. Of course, that was the movie that starred Sandra Bullock and George Clooney, very popular movie, and you had to take them to court.
It's a bit more complicated than that.
Yeah. Can you kind of give a little bit of background then as far as how it happened, because I don't want to mess up any facts.
Okay, let me give you the Cliff Note version. In 1999, I wrote a book called Gravity, published by Simon & Schuster, and I sold it outright to New Line Productions. And my book is about a female medical doctor astronaut who is stranded aboard the International Space Station when her colleagues are all killed through a series of mishaps. And the scenes include the shuttle disaster with everybody dying, and my heroine has to go out and do a spacewalk to repair the damaged ISS. And she gets stranded aboard the space station. And while that movie was in development, I wrote some changes to the movie script. We wanted more explosions at the end, let's put it that way. And so I wrote about satellite debris hitting the International Space Station. It gets destroyed, and my heroine's left drifting alone in her spacesuit. That movie never got made. What I did not know at the time was that they had attached a director to it, and it was Alfonso Cuarón. Now, years later, Alfonso Cuarón writes his original screenplay called Gravity about a female astronaut who's stranded aboard the International Space Station when satellite debris destroys her spacecraft, and she's left drifting in her spacesuit. Now, there are, that number of coincidences with the identical title, Gravity, is odd. I mean, my agent and I immediately thought this is really kind of bizarre, but I didn't know yet. I did not know that Cuarón was attached to my movie, so I thought, I can't prove anything. The movie was made by Warner Brothers, and Warner Brothers now owns New Line Productions. So in February, my agent was informed about Cuarón's attachment to my project, and that she said, "Now you need a lawyer." And that's why we filed suit. It is not a copyright infringement case. I mean, people kind of get confused about this. It's a breach of contract case because I have a contract with New Line, and they have, because Warner Brothers owns the rights to that movie. They have every right to make the film because they own the copyright. But they're supposed to follow the contract, which I signed, which gives me a based upon credit and a production bonus and a few other things. And they just keep insisting that it has nothing to do with my book and they don't owe me anything. So that's why we sued. If I did not know about...
And did they say all that with a straight face? I mean, really.
Oh, absolutely.
Did they say it with a straight face?
Absolutely. They can say anything with a straight face. They're actors.
it's like what they say. In Hollywood, they don't stab you in the back. They'll stab you in the chest.
Right, and they're smiling the whole time and saying, "That's just a little kiss, honey."
Yeah, we love you. Cool.
Right, so that's the situation I'm in, and it's really, really frustrating because it's hard to get your story out there, and all the media is owned by these entertainment conglomerates. So, I mean, how do you get an unbiased news report? You really can't, because everybody just listens to the studio's press releases.
Yeah, and now the follow-up is that you have about 10 days left now to refile the complaint. Am I correct?
Right. Warner Brothers filed a motion to dismiss saying, well, yeah, we don't really feel like we should we should have to follow the contract that she signed with New Line Productions, even though we own New Line Productions. And so the judge said, well, the original complaint that my lawyer filed just needed some more additional documentation about that relationship between New Line and Warner Brothers. And she gave us 20 days to file. And he's really already completed the paperwork, and it will probably, be filed either this week or next week. So we are going forward.
Thank God. Good. That's good.
Best of luck with that.
Yeah, it's going to be a long and drawn-out process. I don't, who knows how long this will take, but I think it's – everybody understands that, for me, it's not about the money because probably, you know, percent of net profits is going to be ending up zero. What matters to me and what matters to a writer is the credit, the based upon credit.
Right.
Because if that goes onto your book, you can sell millions of copies of books with the movie tie-in, and I never was able to do that.
Yeah, and that's the one. And now, yeah, because you're going to turn so many more people from Gravity onto your other books to find you're going to have new fans, you're going to have new readers. I mean, it's a lot of that. I mean, it's everything. And quite frankly, you're
and
the
I
one
have
who
to say,
spent the time in writing
book.
The book.
Right, right.
Yeah.
It was my favorite
I mean,
book of yours, Tess.
Well, yeah. Well, thank you. I mean, there are differences, of course. I sort of feel like the movie got rid of the plot because my book has an enormous amount of plot that gets up to her being stranded. And they got rid of like the first three quarters of the book and just took it from the crisis point on. I think it's pretty recognizable that they were inspired by my story.
Right.
Inspired. You mean that they stole it? Yeah. Say it. I mean, what are they going to do to me? Whatever. So, well, I'll tell you what, Tess. We want to thank you so much for coming on. It has been a thrill. It's always a thrill to talk with you. We're so glad that Rosalie and Isles is back with Die Again, and we are just so pleased to have you on.
Well, thank you so much. It's fun to talk to you guys.
Yeah, it's great.
Always a pleasure.
Okay. Well, let's hope we do it
right.
again soon.
We will.
Sounds good.
All right, so good night, and we'll talk with you soon. And stay out of the snow, all right?
Yeah.
Stay out of the snow.
Good night.
All right, bye-bye. Thanks. So again, everybody, that is author Tess Garrett, the New York Times number one best-selling author of the Rosalie and Isles book. Her latest book is called Die Again. Of course, always go to TessGarrettson.com for a lot more information on the books and everything else she has going on. And we're now, Jeff, now we're excited to see what's going to happen with this next one she's got coming out. That's very intriguing.
Oh, I can't wait.
Yeah, that's going to be fabulous. Well, I'll tell you what, let's take a quick break, and let's come back here, and Jeff and I are going to share with you some reviews and some books that we have on our shelf and things that we are talking about, and we're also going to have a little debate. We're going to share our top five, of course, in honor of Tess and not getting any credit, we're going to share our top five books adapted into movies, and if you like it, that's good, and if you don't, well, then email us and tell us you don't and give us a better five. So here we go. Let's take a really short break, and then we will be right back right after this.
All it takes is the perfect shot. You can take your shot this year in New York City during the 10-year anniversary of Thriller Fest. Take aim during Craft Fest, Pitch Fest, Thriller Fest, and new this year, Career Fest, all designed to help you hit your mark. Meet the pros, like 2015 Thriller Master Nelson DeMille, Silver Bullet recipient Kathy Reichs, with spotlight guests Greg Isles, Charlaine Harris, and Mark Billingham. And let the best help you zero in on your career target at the Grand Hyatt in New York City, July 7th through the 11th, 2015. It's time. Take your shot. Register now. www.thrillerfest.com.
Join Stephen King, Peter Straub, Ellen Datlow, Ramsey Campbell, Jonathan Mayberry, and hundreds more in the Horror Writers Association's campaign, HorrorSelfies.com. Take a selfie with any written message promoting reading or with your favorite book. Check in at HorrorSelfies.com to submit your photo, and you can win signed books. Help us let the world know why horror is important and submit your selfie today. That's www.HorrorSelfies.com.
selling author Tess Garrison and her latest book, Die Again, the latest in the Rizzoli and Isles book. Now's the time when Jeff and I sit down and we talk about what we got on our shelves, what reviews we had going on, and some other things. So, Jeff, what are you reading?
Well, I have to say first, I love you were playing Boston and Tess is from Boston. That was a nice tie-in. That's pretty cool.
I was thinking Aerosmith, but Boston was easier.
What I'm reading, I have to say I've discovered this guy recently, and I'm a huge fan, and I've been going back and reading all of his stuff now. C.J. Box and Joe Pickett is his main character.
Well, you know, I just found out, just so you know, C.J. Box is going to be on our show. He's going to be on, not on Beyond the Cover. I'm going to have him on Suspense Radio, they asked me, and I said, yeah, sure, I'll have him on.
Oh, wow.
So,
he does a marvelous job. His character is Joe Pickett, and he's a basically a wildlife guy out of Wyoming. And they're just – the setting is so amazing. You feel like it's a combination of a Western thriller mystery all at once. And they're so emotional, too. I really, really like them. Huh. I highly recommend him.
Nice.
So that's one.
And what else are you reading?
Crazy Love You. It's Lisa Unger's new book that's coming out officially tomorrow.
I almost picked that up. I saw that the other day, and I almost picked it up to start reading.
It's the story of a guy named Ian, and he grew up bullied because he was a fat kid, essentially. And his mother was responsible for killing his baby sister and almost him. If it wasn't for the compassion of a young classmate named Pris, he would have died. So as he gets older, he gets thinner, and Pris is by his side the whole time. And in the present, he's become sort of a graphic novelist, very successful. And Pris is in his life, but just more like a person who is there. And he finds someone and falls in love with her, but Pris does not like this. And the jealousy enrages her. And it's a really great emotional roller coaster. I really liked it a lot. And nice twist, too. I always like a good twist.
Yeah, I do. I like the good twist. I like thinking that I got it figured out, and then I don't.
This is definitely like that. Yeah. For sure.
Well, I just picked up, and what I'm reading right now is David Morrell's Inspector of the Dead, which is the sequel to Murderers of Fine Art. Sort of, I guess, pseudo sequel. It's got the same characters and things. So, I mean, but it's kind of like his little series, and David really hasn't done a series, I don't think, since Rambo, if I'm correct, but I could be wrong.
Brotherhood of the Rose.
But he's not. Oh, okay, yeah, okay. But he's not a big series writer, let's put that. He's known for Rambo, but he's not really known for series and things like that. But I'll tell you, just the little bit that I've gotten through right now, I've gotten through about 100 pages. Why he's not mentioned more as a master thriller writer is beyond me. I mean, the guy puts words on pages that you just didn't think would fit like perfectly together. And I mean, it's a master. I mean, right now it's a masterpiece.
Yeah.
What he's writing.
I love The Murderers of Fine Art. So I'm anxious to read the next one, as you mentioned.
You haven't got it yet.
I have it, but I haven't read it yet.
Oh, okay. Well, and the good thing
it's
is it's only
pile.
Like 300 pages and it's only like 300 pages. So it's not like it's a massive book. You know, it's not anything massive like that. So I think it's great. That's the only one that I'm reading right now because I did just finish The Stranger and we were doing the magazine and trying to get that out. So I didn't have a lot of time to get done. But we did have the magazine just released the January-February issue. I know you got yours, right?
Oh, absolutely. And thanks for the interview.
Yeah, because you had an interview in there. You had a couple in there. And that was good.
Yeah.
And now we got over 20-some pages of reviews. So do you have any books that you just reviewed that you want to talk about?
Well, except for Crazy Love You, I have to say I just read Rick Mafina's Full Tilt.
Oh.
And I love Rick Mafina. And you mentioned why David Morrell isn't considered a master. I do not know why Rick Mafina is not one of those people published in hardcover, I swear. Every single one of his books is just great.
All of his books are paperback. But, you know,
yep.
I think that's a publisher thing. I don't know. Look how long it took Alison Brennan to get her stuff into hardback. I guess that's the next step, isn't it? As you go from paperback to hardback, and that means that they consider you more of a worthy author in their business. Would that be considered the right thing to say?
I don't know if that's what the publishers think, but as far as I'm concerned, you know, he writes great books, and that stereotype doesn't fit him.
Mm-hmm.
They deserve to be full out hardcover the works. So I don't know.
Well, let me give you some here that we reviewed in the magazine. Now, again, the reviews that we put in the Suspense magazine, we never send out negative reviews. So all the reviews that you see in here are all books that we say you should read. Whatever genre you got, you know, we got suspense, mystery, thriller, horror, we got them all covered. And not all of the books are for everybody because it's just not in your genre. If you're a cozy author, you're probably not going to read a horror novel. And that's fine. We always have a little bit in there for everything. But we don't send out negative reviews because it's not up to us to crush somebody else's work just because maybe we didn't enjoy the topic of it. But here's a couple that I want to bring up. Is one book is called Temple Mount, and it's by Keith Raffel. We talked with Keith about Chacon, really nice guy, and the book is excellent. It is it's historical, and it's set in ancient cities of Jerusalem and are allegedly buried under both incarnations and where the Ark of the Covenant is allegedly hidden. So he has a historical factor with that one. The next one I'm going to talk about is Death by Devil's Breath by Kylie Logan. And this one is a little bit on the different side, but just because of what you say, what it is that it's a cozy. So Death by Devil's Breath, it's a cozy book. It's going to be a whodunit. It's one of those cute mysteries. It's one of those things, so don't let the title kind of fool you. But it is. It's a wonderful book. In fact, these cozies that are coming out, a lot of these are really fabulous. And the last one is called The Deep by Nick Cutter. Have you heard of that one, Jeff? Because this one, our reviewer thought was wonderful, and it's recommended for lovers of sci-fi, horror, and books that make you question your sanity. I just love that line for that reviewer wrote for people. Books that question that make you question your sanity. So I had to bring up those three books.
They sound good.
Yeah. So now let's get into our debate. You want to get into our debate? Because I got mine. I got my five ready. And what we're going to do is this.
Well,
and we can do this in any order.
Yeah,
you
go
want.
Ahead. Tell people.
How do you want to do it? You want to each give our five, or you want to say, okay, here's my number five, and then we'll just go back and forth. We want to do it that way?
Let's go back and forth, but at least tell our readers what we're doing. Our listeners.
So
I'm sorry. I'm reading today. Yes.
Yeah. So what we're going to do is, like we said, in honor of Tess and being screwed by Hollywood, we are going to talk that were adapted into movies. So the book was excellent, they adapted it, and the movie was excellent. They did a fabulous job in doing it because the old adage always goes, the book is better than the movie. Sometimes I agree with that. Sometimes I don't agree with that, to be quite honest with you. Sometimes I think they actually did a better movie than there was the book. And I'll be one of the first ones to say, but always, you know, a lot of people always say the book is better than the movie. So we wanted to go ahead and say these are our five. Now, I don't know your five, and you don't know my five, so this is totally going to be, you know, hearing it for the first time. So do you want to go first?
Sure.
Okay, so you give me your number five, and then I'll give you my number five.
All right, and by the way, I did some TV shows as well, just because I thought might as well mix it up a bit. But
that's good.
My
all
number
minor
five,
movies, but yeah.
Yeah, so my number five is Harlan Coben's Tell No One. Love the book, and it was made into a French movie, which was amazing. And wow. It's so good. It won French awards for, like, Best Picture, whatever the French equivalent of the Oscars is. And they keep talking about making an American version.
It's called Les Oscars. I have no idea. I just picked that from Pulp Fiction.
Okay, I like that.
The Les Big Mac.
Royale with cheese, yes. It's a great book, great movie, and it's one of those that they did an amazing adaptation of it. They keep talking about making an American version. I hope they don't.
Going screwed up. Well, here's my number five. My number five is from Dennis Lehan, and it's Mystic River. I thought that the cast was fabulous. I like Sean Penn and Tim Robbins in that movie. I thought the book was excellent. Dennis does a fabulous job in what he does. And I didn't realize until recently, I guess I just didn't look, that he was one of the co-writers on the show The Wire, which was on HBO. He did a lot of stuff for that. So I thought Mystic River was a great book. I remember listening to it on a book on tape, so I didn't actually read it, but I heard the book on tape was it was unabridged, so I got the whole thing. And then I thought the movie was just like spot on. I thought they did a fabulous job with it. So
Of Shutter Island?
Shutter Island is one of my favorite movies, and I never read the book.
Okay.
I admit. But I love Shutter Island.
I couldn't watch the movie.
Really? See, I love
I hated
Leonardo
the book
DiCaprio
so much.
In those rules. You hated the book?
Well, you know why, based on seeing the movie. So.
Oh, okay. I gotcha.
Yeah.
You didn't like the movie.
Yeah,
then.
No spoilers here. No spoilers here. So,
okay.
Anyway.
All right. So go ahead, number four.
It's based on the book Nothing Lasts Forever by Roderick Thorpe. We know it as the movie Die Hard.
Was that
absolutely.
That was the movie Die Hard?
Yes, it was. Die Hard is one of the best action films and one of the best movies ever. It's
well, you want to
amazing.
Know what's funny.
I love that movie.
Here's what's funny.
What?
Where I work, outside my window, I look at Nakatomi Tower every day because I could throw a stone and hit it.
Because
The Fox Building is literally right where I work in Century City, and I work in the two towers, and right there is the Fox Building. So I see Nakatomi Tower all the time. And it's funny because whenever I see the movie, I always look, and I'm like, boy, things sure to change in Century City. Okay, they must have been on this side of the building when they filmed this, and here's the fountains. And so I know like where they were on certain parts of it. I'm kind of weird like that.
That's awesome. Yeah, here's
my
swung
number.
By a fire hose. Yeah.
Yeah. So here's my number four, and I'm going to go with the absolute queen of mystery in Agatha Christie, and it's Death on the Nile. But it's not the Peter Ustinov version. It's the David Sawkamp version that they did in the series Perot, which, of course, you can now watch on Netflix. That adaptation for Death on the Nile was much better than what they did in the bigger movie with Peter Ustinov. So make sure, if you haven't seen it, see the David Sawkamp version, because that is 10 times better than the one that Peter Ustinov did in Death on the Nile.
Well, that's good to know, because I wasn't pleased with that version of it, so I'll have to check that version out. Cool.
And it's on Netflix, I think it's on Netflix to stream. They don't have all the seasons on there, but I believe that one is on there, and you have to check it out because you'll be like, oh, much better. Yes, much better.
Well, my daughter's just discovered Agatha Christie, so this will be perfect. Good to know.
Oh, yes.
My number three
number
is a
three.
TV show. Yes,
okay.
It's a TV show, and it's Bones, based on the Reichs books.
Kathy Reichs.
Yes, and it's kind of weird the way it's laid out. If you're a fan of the books, it's not really the same thing, but, it works, and it's a lot of fun.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's kind of like Rizzoli and Isles, like Tess said. I mean, you have the TV as one, and you have the books, which are the other. Still works well.
Right.
I think the show's really good. So, I mean, it works. It might not be adapted 100%, but at least it's very good.
Yes. And in terms of the Rizzoli and Isles, my mom, that's her favorite show. And when I told her, do you like the books? I asked her. She goes, they're books? She had no idea.
Yeah.
So
that's funny. You know what would be even more funny is if, like, Jane or Mara in the show are reading a book and it's like, you know, The Silent Girl by Tess Gerritsen, and you just kind of see it and they kind of put it down. That would be funny if they put that in it. So my number three, which I'm not supposed to talk about, but I have to talk about, but the rule number one is not to talk about it.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah. So we can't say much more about it because you're not supposed to talk about it. But any movie that puts boobs on meatloaf and makes him look like that is in my top five. That's all there is to it.
I'll make a confession. I had not read the book and I went and saw the movie. And I remember sitting there going, why do people like this? And then when it was over, I went, oh my God, I get it.
Exactly. That's what I did. Cause I was like, what is going on? And then when they go back and, you know, if you haven't seen the movie, I don't care. I'm going to spoil it for you. You just, you know,
don't.
But I'm just saying, get to the last 10% of the movie, the whole thing starts making sense. That's all I'm going to say then. With the last 10%, you're like, holy shit, now I get it. And it's all explained.
Yeah.
So it's not like you're worried about, you know, something unexplained. It's all explained, which is good. Okay, number two.
It's another TV show, and I miss it already. King and Maxwell, which was based on the David Baldacci books.
When did they do the TV show? Was that a miniseries?
It was 10 episodes on TNT about a year and a half ago. The showrunner was from NCIS. And I got to tell you, the pilot was terrible. The pilot was terrible. But I thought, well, I love these characters so much from the books. I'll give it another chance. And I'm glad I did. The show was great after that. They just started off bad. But I think they turned off so many people from the pilot. That's why the show didn't get picked up.
Did you think that was better than when they did Absolute Power? Because that was his first book.
I thought they did a nice adaptation of Absolute Power, and that almost made my list.
Oh, did it? Okay.
I like Clint Eastwood.
Here's my number two, and we talked about it. I believe we talked about it last week in a certain context when we were talking about series and standalones, but it's Misery by Stephen King.
There you go.
I thought that they did a fabulous job. In fact, that is the number one adaptation of one of his books into a movie, I think, hands down. I don't think anybody can argue. People might say Shawshank or Stand By Me. Those weren't books, people. Those were short stories, first of all, so they weren't full-length novels.
Christine.
Yeah, but you know what, Christine.
I'd agree. Misery's better.
The book into the movie. There's some differences in there. I mean, how he finds the car, kind of how the car kind of talks to him a little bit in the book. They didn't really show that too well in the movie. And I'm not saying it wasn't a bad thing, but I don't think it was a very good adaptation. I think the worst, of course, is The Shining. I mean, until he finally got his hands on it and did it in the TV show realm with the three episodes. I mean, was it Martin Scorsese or someone just totally butchered his book?
It was Stanley Kubrick.
Stanley Kubrick, who did Clockwork Dumb. He totally just butchered that novel. And I mean, oh, what an embarrassment. So that's my number two is Misery by Stephen King. Okay.
Number one. Before I mention my number one, I have to say that there's a show coming on in the fall based on a series of books that I adore and I cannot wait. And it's the Shannara series by Terry Brooks. I cannot wait.
Oh,
so I'm just throwing that out
there. Terry, you know, I haven't read that series, but I have read some Terry Brooks stuff because I think he did a Star Wars book. That was very good. But he does a lot of those things. Yeah, I like Terry. Good writer. Fabulous writer. I got to watch. I got to look out for that. You email me when you get some information because I got to put that on my radar.
Yeah, absolutely. I will do that. My number one is kind of a cheat, but it fits in what we've been talking about. Do you remember the TNT mystery movies?
I do, and then they got rid of them.
That's right. They had several by authors we adore. They had Lisa Gardner's book Hyde. They did Sandra Brown. They did Richard North Patterson.
I think they did Lisa Scottoline.
Yeah, and Scott Turow. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Loved them. Loved them. And the ratings were terrible, and I don't know why they were.
Here's the thing. But Alan Jacobson was scheduled to do something with Karen Vale, and that never happened because then they killed that series.
I was going to mention that. Yeah, Alan was telling me that, and I thought, oh, it would be perfect for –
yeah.
I don't know what happened.
And
I think that idea
TNT
worked.
Yeah, killed that. Yeah.
I think on another network it would be successful.
I agree.
You and I could run this. Let's do it. Let's do it.
Okay.
Let's approach a network and let's go do it.
It's got to be like on a Starz or HBO, because the one thing I think that some of these thriller and these suspense things go, it has to – you can't – some of it you just can't kind of dumb down the suspense and the thrill. And I think that sometimes those network TV stations like TNT, Lifetime, or stuff like that, they have to cut some of that stuff out, which really doesn't do very well. So I think it has to go on one of those cable shows where anything goes and there's really no censorship.
I would have to agree with you on that one for sure.
Yeah. So, okay. Let's
so what's
number
your number
one?
You
my number one? What's your number one? What was it?
The TNT Mystery Movies.
All of them?
Well, yeah. Specifically Lisa Gardner's Hyde. I thought that was the best one.
Oh, okay. Okay. My number one, and there's no arguing. There's no arguing this. You can't argue this one. I have the better number one.
Okay.
The Maltese Falcon.
Really?
I mean, come on. Dude, literally, the book, they were saying lines from the freaking book. They literally, he's like, the dialogue is perfect in the book, so that's what you're going to say. And that's what they said. I mean, it was basically bringing the book to the TV. I mean, you couldn't have adapted a better one than that unless it was like To Kill a Mockingbird, but that doesn't count because it's not really in our genre. So I think The Maltese Falcon is one of the greatest mysteries. I know it's one of the greatest adaptions. And if you have Tom Sawyer and I can get him on the line, he'll agree with you. He'll agree with me.
No, actually, yeah. I would agree with you. I think that's a great choice.
Because
I really like
what
that.
Tom told me,
a lot in the book.
Tom gave me some background, just so people know. Tom Sawyer was one of the producers, producer showrunner for Murder, She Wrote for several years. I think about 7 years he was. And he just wrote his latest book, Cross Purposes, which is his first in his Barney Moon series. So make sure you check that out. But Tom loves The Maltese Falcon, and he gives me some Hollywood insight stuff in the back. And basically, when they were doing the thing, the guy wasn't really a screenwriter. So he basically just took the book and just copied it. That's how he did his freaking screenwriting. Because he really didn't know anything. So he just said, fuck it. And then he just did it.
And it worked.
That's beautiful. And it did. Oh, it did. I got to admit, it really did work. But now let's go to a couple things of stuff that we want to see that we haven't seen yet.
I have a couple different ideas for that. Yep, I have a couple for those.
Okay.
And I call it my Wake Up Hollywood. Wake Up Hollywood.
Okay.
I'll do number two first. We'll go backwards, okay?
Okay.
I would love to see a Sigma Force movie or TV series based on the books by James Rollins.
James Rollins, yes.
Love
yes,
Sigma Force.
Good.
Great cast of characters, great stuff they go through. Could easily be a great series or a movie.
Mm-hmm. Yep, I agree with that. And who else?
And then the other one I wanted to mention is Caitlin Strong.
Oh,
by the John Land books.
Yes.
Love Caitlin Strong. Love her.
Yes.
She is such a strong woman. And I could easily see several different women playing that role. And it would be a great series, a specifically series. I could see it as a movie, but a series would be even better for it.
Yeah.
And I think it got screwed by that god-awful show that was on ABC. Oh, God. Killer Women was terrible.
John even kind of said that was like, if that was going to go, he was probably going to get green-lighted. And then it flopped, and then they're like, "Yeah, screw it, we're not kind of bad."
Oh.
Yeah.
Oh,
well,
terrible.
We're running down here. We're running close out of time, so let me drop my two real fast. We already mentioned one, and that's Alan Jacobson and Karen Vale. I think that he would be a great thing, especially Inmate 1577 would be fabulous way to start. And then the other one, I think, is Steve Barry with Cotton Malone. I don't see how you can ignore him. I don't see how you can ignore that.
Well, I have to agree with you there.
Yeah, I mean, he's the historical aspect and how he writes. I mean, he's a 10 times better writer than Dan Brown. Might not be as controversial in a subject matter with what he stole from Holy Blood, Holy Grail, Mr. Brown, and threw your wife under the bus. Don't worry, he's never come on the show anyway, so screw it. But it's just a matter of, you know, Steve is just so much better of a writer. Cotton Malone is such a great character, and there's such great things that he's done, from the Romanov prophecy to the Vendetta. I forget the something, the Vendetta. The Amber Room.
Paris Vendetta.
Of course. The Paris Vendetta. I mean, he's done so many great things. You know, the Lincoln Myth was just out, the Jefferson, and then you've got another one, Patriot Threat.
Patriot Threat.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so that's the
just
one.
Read
so,
it, actually.
So
we'll talk about
it
when the publishing date gets closer.
Yeah. So, yeah. Well, Jeff, you got anything else before we wrap it up? It's been fun.
No, I think it's been fun. Thanks. One show I wanted to like based on a book that I really enjoyed, but they and it blew chunks, was Intelligence. It was a show based on the book Phoenix Island by John Dixon. And love the book.
Yeah.
And Intelligence, I have no idea what that show was about. Great cast, great content, and they just blew it.
What they forgot to do was at the beginning of the show, they eliminated the word limited. Limited intelligence. So, yeah. Well, and then let me remind everybody here, of course, we want to thank Tess Gerritsen for coming on today, and you can go to TessGerritsen.com for more information. Our next show, we are going to have Kathleen Antrim come on, and she is going to let authors know, and people, of course, you got to pitch your book, right? And she is one of the co-founders with PitchFest with John Land, or one of the co-runners with John Land, and Jeff and I have talked about her before, that she lets authors know how to pitch your book, how to get it in front of somebody, how to get an agent to look at it or a publisher. And then after that, we are going to have a big announcement. Jeffrey Deaver's coming on this show, of course, with Lincoln Rhyme Novels, Bone Collector, Skin Collector, that he just had out. He just did something called The Starling Project, which is on CD, and it's like an audio adaption, and it's a fabulous thing. So we're going to get him on the show, I believe it's March 23rd. So, Jeff, it's always a pleasure, my man.
Always a pleasure. Thanks so much.
And I guess it's a wrap, isn't it? I guess we're just calling it a night.
All right.
Nothing else to do, so we'll just call it a night. Besides, I'm kind of hungry. Oh, and there's the music anyway. The music's telling us it's time to go. All right. Thank you again, everybody, for joining. Again, I'm your host, John Robb, with... He didn't even say it. He left me.
He's on the cover.
Son of a bitch. Oh, there he is. Jeff Bears with me on the cover. All right. We'll see you again, everybody. See you in 2 weeks. Enjoy. Bye-bye.
Take care.